You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 590, recorded on February 26th, 2019. Digital Etiquette. Wells Tech is a weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Today we're joined by Martin Luther College professor Rachel Feld, and we begin talking about digital etiquette from the book Faithfully Connected, something we've been reviewing over the past few months. So Rachel joins us and talks about the importance of showing love online. In that discussion, we kind of uncover a disturbing new trend on Reddit called Roast Me. Tune in for that. And conversation about the digital day of unplugging that's coming up this weekend. Are you getting involved? And finally, we're going to be introduced to a brand new podcast called Lost Coins. Extremely well done. I think you're going to want to tune into that one as well. Stay tuned for Wells Tech. Hello again, everybody. This is Wells Tech, and we're up to episode 590, recording this on February 26th, 2019. A show about technology and ministry, where we kind of go through the relevant tools, topics, techniques, in hopes to find those intersections of ministry and technology. Helping me find those, as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Mr. Spriggs. Happy to be joining
Very
you.
Very formal today, aren't we?
Yes. Yes.
What did you do wrong?
Oh, I'm not confessing it to the world.
Okay.
Whatever it is. So, but yes, I'm happy to be joining you, and I'm happy that we have someone else joining us today, as is our custom. Once a month, we have a education technology focused show and bring on a semi-regular classroom technology correspondent. And this month that would be Professor Rachel Feld from Martin Luther College. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Martin. Hi, Sally. Thanks for having me again.
How are you?
Oh, well, you know, the not completely buried in snow, just partially. So
it's compacting. Okay. It's not melting. It's just compacting a little bit. It's very deceiving.
Oh, is it ever? It's a little ridiculous here.
No kidding. Well, this too shall pass one way or another. Yeah, absolutely. But we're all safe and sound. We're in heated environments, I'm assuming, or maybe in Sally's case, cooled environments. I don't know. But we're in podcasting gear, and that's a good thing because it's podcasting time. And our topic of the month, as per our custom for this series, is going through a book called Faithfully Connected, Integrating Biblical Principles. Now, I'm reading the very top line of this page. So I don't even have the book cover. How does that subtitle finish? Everybody's flipping to the cover. I have a digital book, so it's tougher for me.
Well, some of us have paper copies, so
some
it's
of
pretty
us,
easy.
Yes.
Integrating biblical principles in a digital world.
The digital world. I could have made that up, I think.
Yes.
But this was a selection from you, Rachel, a suggestion from you. Tell us a little bit about how this came to be. Why is this book in our hands?
Sure. So it crossed my desk from Concordia Publishing House through one of their emails. I usually buy music through them, but they send me emails about books, too. And a professor here on campus, Dr. Kiri Minty, saw the title and thought of me. So I actually use it in the course I teach here at MLC, which is Teaching with Technology. And we use it kind of as a reflective piece and a application piece to think through lots of these ways that technology can influence our lives and think about how that will apply to our classrooms.
Now, I would guess that you could have some pretty lively or interesting discussions with the students there. Has that been the case?
Yeah. You know, sixth hour usually is a little more lively than first hour, but some feedback I've gotten from students is just how, you know, they've they understand how technology influences their lives, but looking at it from the perspective of a teacher, that our students are going to have just such different experiences growing up with technology than I did, or than my 20-year-old students did, that we need to be purposeful in how we are approaching our students' use of technology, and especially how we can let our lights shine and show that we are Christians through our technology use.
And I think that's something this book emphasizes really well. One of the things that makes me happy to be reading something published by Concordia, written by the men behind it, is that it does look at the use of technology in learning through a Christian worldview. And so just as an example, this month we're looking at chapter 5, which is on digital etiquette. And right off the bat, the authors say, we know what etiquette is. That's the law that God wrote on all our hearts, those commandments that we have. And we know the gospel side of that, that we don't always satisfy those commandments perfectly, but that we're forgiven and that we can live as Christians, letting our light shine, just like you said.
One of the interesting things as I was reading through this digital etiquette chapter is the overriding principle. You mentioned the law written on our hearts, but the greatest commandments as well, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and then love your neighbor as yourself. There's going to be a couple places in here where that's really going to come out pretty clearly. And just the connection to an academic subject in a lot of respects, and they talk about that in a section here too, how digital etiquette applies, and then how God's word can play into that, and kind of the importance for a Christian teacher to connect the dots for the kids, because it's very easy just kind of teach the subject, but to try and connect it back to the purpose and our purpose in this world is super important, super critical in the educational process, at least in my opinion. I think that comes out in the book too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, connecting the dots that etiquette isn't just a face-to-face thing.
Right.
That it is a wherever you are and whatever you're doing thing. And I've seen screenshots of mean words on Twitter or, you know, whatever, social media, from people who would never say such things face-to-face. But for some reason that, you know, technology gives us a sense of comfort and anonymity. There you
yes.
go. That makes us feel we can, you know, say what we want and there won't be repercussions. And if we don't start teaching our students that that's not the case, and that, you know, God's rule to be kind is a rule no matter where you are, I think it could have a devastating effect on society if we're not teaching that to our students.
Yeah, there's a presentation that I do on social networking and living your faith online, and one of the psychological effects. There's actually a very good article on Wikipedia called The Online Disinhibition Effect, and that's exactly what you were talking about, Rachel, where there are factors, there are reasons, there are psychological reasons why people kind of become different people when they're online. You mentioned anonymity, invisibility. There's this concept of asynchronous communications because it's not real time. So you're saying something and somebody is not, you know, in your face, they would respond over time and you could make a decision to ignore it or not even come back to that dialogue. You could just walk away. There's also this concept of, you know, there's no stratification, there's no rules, there's no hierarchy. You know, everybody's equal online. It's really an interesting psychological study as to why this happens. And then you throw in our good old sinful nature and you can kind of, you know, understand why this thing happens. And that's something we have to reinforce. And that all goes with that digital etiquette concept that, hey, we are to love our neighbor and to do anything different, to act any different, whether it's in face, you know, face to face or, you know, online, you know, that's a violation, that's a sin.
You know, one thing this book does really well, and I'm kind of jumping to the end, telling you the end of the story, but at the end of each chapter, there are lesson plans. And I thought this was one area where they, you know, encourage you to have your children, even your students, even role play these kind of scenarios. And
right.
maybe in the process of acting out some of these things in real time and face to face, but seeing, you know, the effects of some of these things and how they might hurt someone or whatever, that might make it a little bit more real to them.
Right. You know, there was a news story just on last night's news. Those of you that are in the Milwaukee area maybe saw this on TMJ4, Channel 4, where they were, and this I had not heard of, but apparently it's a big thing on Reddit, which is kind of a news, not a news service, but a place where there's dialogue, conversation. It's kind of like the old-fashioned bulletin board. But on Reddit, they have these subreddits. And subreddits are usually preceded with the letter R and then a slash. You go to reddit.com/r/, you know, whatever the title is. And there's a subreddit right now, and these are just kind of themed conversations called Roast Me. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of this. We'll put a link in the show notes. But TMJ did a nice job in explaining what this was. But basically, the concept is that somebody can basically, they take a picture of themselves and then they write on a little piece of paper and hold it, you know, in front of them with the subreddit signature r/roastme. And the intention is that they're inviting people to roast them, basically, you know, and a lot of it really revolves around looks and, you know, just kind of, you know, super critical. And you know, some of these are just brutal, you know, roasts, and they're invited by the individuals. And there were psychologists on talking about how harmful, you know, a lot of them say, well, this is harmless fun, quote unquote, harmless fun. But psychologists, especially for kids, think this could be these things could, you know, the things that they read about themselves and that they've invited on themselves would stick with them, you know, into adulthood and forever. And, you know, those that are maybe tending towards, you know, low self-image, you know, could become, you know, you go further down that path and become suicidal and just a terrible thing. Reddit has since put a disclaimer on there. I said this is really only for 18 and above, but I couldn't help but think, boy, how much this is a violation of those commandments we were talking about. Love your neighbor as yourself. You know, to even participate in this is just, you know, beyond belief, but it's so hugely popular. It just, you know, you shake your head at some of this stuff.
Well, and it's a pop culture thing, too.
Yep.
I think it is it Wendy's that is roasting different fast food joints on Twitter
right.
in the past couple weeks where, you know, kids are reading that and saying, hey, that's really funny. Let's, you know, do that ourselves. And then you get into this, you know, what was meant to be something funny turns into something
turns
that
in, you know, could turn easily
okay.
into bullying even.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, it's just the way that I think the devil works.
Yeah. Makes me sad.
Had you guys heard
yeah,
of that?
Tough stuff. I haven't. So
I didn't either. It was just
hard
kind
stuff.
Of a shock to me that this is so big. If you go on there and read some of them, yeah, I mean, you almost, you have to turn away sometimes. It's really bad.
That's
so.
Tough. So cycling back to the school discussion of or the school angle of this, one thing schools need to consider is whose problem is this kind of thing anyway?
Right.
So, you know, a Reddit or a subreddit, a theme that might be questionable or sharing too much on social media or whatever it may be, bullying. You know, if it's on a school supplied device, is the school responsible? If it happens off campus, is the parent responsible? Where do responsibilities lie? What kind of things need to be in your student handbook about those kind of scenarios?
Now, this is one of those things where I was thankful to be a first and second grade teacher where
kidding.
This wasn't, you know, technology is going younger and younger, but thankfully my first graders still weren't on Twitter yet, at least that I knew of. But, you know, how does a principal handle a parent coming to them and saying, hey, this is happening on social media with classmates, you know, it's not happening at a school's sanctioned event, but it's also not happening like at a play date or like a birthday party. So really, where does that responsibility fall can be a struggle.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting angles of this chapter not only talked about the responsibility in the classroom and kind of educating the kids, but providing tools and in some cases educating the parents, because the behavior, you know, of the child is often, you know, caught, you know, from the parents. So if the parents are exhibiting these kinds of behaviors, then the children are going to pick up on that too. So there's a kind of, there's a holistic approach to this, and it involves not just maybe the school, but the church family and just the fellowship of believers encouraging each other to be good role models and to take active steps and have good conversations with each other and with your kids.
Yeah, this is the part of the chapter that got me really excited, because as I was reading, I didn't notice that there was a little sidebar about different websites that could help you do this kind of education. And so immediately as I was reading, I was reminded of the PTO Today website, which is a website set up to support parent-teacher organizations or associations. And they have a whole series of kits that are downloadable that'll help you promote and run what they call family nights or family events at your school. And one of those kits happens to be a family tech talk night. And they provide PowerPoints and a planning guide, promotion materials, fact sheets, bookmarks, safety pledges, all kinds of things that you can use to kind of structure a PTO event, an evening event or a weekend event or something like that, with the parents involved as well as the students. And they even follow up with blurbage that you can use like in your monthly school newsletters or whatever, or your weekly newsletters. So I think that's an excellent resource. It's free. You just have to go to their website and kind of sign up for an account to be able to download it. But that's just one example. And since all the materials are downloadable, you can take them and customize them to meet your needs. You don't have to use them exactly the way, you know, they produce them. But it's certainly a whole lot of the thought process is taken care of for you for planning an event like this.
Well, I think that parent whole family education is huge, because, you know, you have the one side where students might be learning their bad habits from their parents, and then the other side where parents maybe don't hardly use technology or social media at all, and so their parents, their kids are doing things that they have no idea about. And so trying to get, you know, whole families on the same page so that parents can have a good handle on what their child might be doing on social media and what is possible, I think is very important.
Rachel, what's the, this is a little bit off topic, but it came to my mind as we're talking about maybe educating parents, encouraging parents, being models. What's the current thinking about friending parents or being kind of in social networks with parents as a teacher?
Well, you know, I can tell you what my practice was. And, you know, I've heard lots of different opinions. My practice was that I friended any parent that requested me. I didn't go out and seek parents because I didn't want to be seen as playing favorites mm-hmm. or anything like that. And I didn't ever decline a parent invitation because I, again, didn't want to be seen as, oh, I don't like that parent, but I do like this parent. But I also am not one to share a ton of personal information on social media. Like you can probably figure out that I like my cats and that I like Star Wars from my Facebook page, and that maybe is about it. I do know several teachers that have separate accounts. They have a teacher account and then they have their own personal account to try and keep those separate. And I know of schools that are starting to write policies to really kind of clearly define what is and isn't okay as far as friending parents. You know, mm-hmm. the tough part is not only are you a teacher in the congregation, you're also a member.
Right.
And those parents are, you know, if you're not friends with the parents, there might not be a whole lot of other people to be friends with. So that line can get blurred, but I think it's important to think through what the ramifications are
sure.
of your choices.
And I can see, you know, both sides of that clearly, that could put you in difficult situations if there's some behavior, something said, done, that is not in line with Christian values. What do you do? What is mm-hmm. your responsibility? Are you friend? Are you teacher? Are you, you know, whatever? But you also have the ability to model, you know, good Christian behavior and live your faith online too, as an example yeah. to those parents too. So it's a tough one.
And friending students is also another that can be a tough topic too. You know, technically they're not supposed to have accounts until they're 13.
Facebook is 13, yeah.
Yep. But my rule was you had to graduate high school, and then I would friend you mm-hmm. because they're, you know, they're still making choices and putting them online, and I didn't want to be in the position to have to, you know, do I go to the high school principal and say, hey,
right.
I found this, or do I go to their parent? I just didn't want to be in that situation. So you had to graduate high school before I would friend you. Hmm.
Anything else before we close this discussion on this chapter?
There are some good resources as far as, you know, teaching digital etiquette and other digital literacy type of things. Unfortunately, I haven't found anything yet from a Christian viewpoint as far as curricular resources, but definitely can be applied there. Common Sense Education is one of those. They have a whole digital citizenship curriculum. And then Google has their Be Internet Awesome curriculum that also goes along with a pretty fun game to play. So there are plenty of resources available for teachers who want to, you know, do some more direct instruction with these topics.
And I wouldn't think it would be too difficult to Christianize them,
no,
or at least bring in God's word, of course. And
yeah.
when I've read through them and used pieces of them, I haven't found them to be overly humanistic. I mean, they're fairly straightforward in that respect. Has that been your experience, Sally and Rachel?
Yep.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you.
Okay. So we'll put all those links in the show notes. Again, if you want to read along with us, we got a bunch of chapters left. Grab the book, Faithfully Connected, from Concordia Publishing House. It's available on Amazon, available paper, digital, whatever your flavor, you know, of whatever your personal preference is. You can grab it and read along with us, because we'll be taking another chapter next month with Jason. So good discussion. Thanks, ladies.
Mm-hmm.
Shall we move on to news in tech?
Yep. News in tech this week, we want to focus a spotlight on the National Day of Unplugging, which is coming up this weekend. Actually, it's an annual event that is the people behind it are Jewish, so they celebrate it from Friday evening through Saturday evening, March 1st and 2nd. So you could choose to, if you wanted to do a full day, morning to evening, you could do either day, Friday or Saturday.
I could do it overnight.
Yeah, overnight. That helps, doesn't it? So the concept behind it is that you put down your devices and your screens. You don't access them for a 24-hour period. They say we increasingly miss out on the important moments of our lives as we pass the hours with our noses buried in our devices. So they offer a free downloadable kit. You just have to sign up on their website, and part of it is a sign, I unplug too, and you fill in the blank as to, you know, the great things you're doing while you're unplugged from your device, and you can take a selfie with it. I don't know if there's a Reddit or a subreddit with that selfie or what, but you can post it out there if you wanted.
You have to do that outside of the 24-hour period, apparently.
No, I think you could do it in the 24-hour. Oh,
that's
duh.
Not necessarily unplugging then, is it? No.
Sorry, I'm a little bit slow, but yeah. So yeah, do it beforehand while you're unplugging and while you're going to be offline for 24 hours.
That's the last Great thing point. You do, right?
So okay. You guys are going to be doing this, right?
Well, I was wondering, if I sign up for it, do you think my online course instructors would give me an extension on my homework?
Great question.
Like, here I am doing this really important thing.
I would not bet any money on me surviving 24 hours without a device. I will be fully honest there.
You've done this in the past, right, Sally?
I have, and encouraged my family to do it with me. It's hard. It's really hard. You know, we are pretty good, or when we had our boys around our dinner table or whatever, we were pretty good about engaging with each other in conversation. You know, one thing they encourage you to do is have somewhere to put your phones off to the side so you're not looking at them while you're having a family meal or whatever. But we always ended up on something that we wanted to Google and find right. out, you know? And so it's just really hard to do. It is.
You need Alexa then?
Yeah. That's a device too.
She's going to ask me in just a minute. So. All right. Let's move on to Wells Now.
Yeah, and along with a feature on the Wells.net homepage, we wanted to feature the Care Committee for Called Workers, which is an arm of our special ministries congregational services area. And basically, the Care Committee for Called Workers exists to help calling bodies care for their called workers, spiritual, physical, intellectual, and emotional care, just kind of the full person care. And they do that in a lot of ways. They have downloadable resources and things that you can make use of. And specifically for pastors, we wanted to make mention of the Grow in Grace effort from Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. It's been in existence since 2010, and they want to support the growth of pastors in their callings with a special emphasis on spiritual and professional growth. So a lot of great resources that are out there and available for congregations and schools to take advantage of to support their called workers. I venture to say that called workers have a pretty high burnout rate. It's not an easy job, and we so appreciate them being God's hands and voices to lead our congregations and schools, and we need to support them in that ministry effort.
Yep, absolutely. And we need them to bring their A game, too. Mm-hmm. So we need them to be happy and have joy in their ministry. So that's really what this is about. So good one. Thanks, Sally. Yep. All right, let's move along to our picks of the week. And we're going to let Rachel hit lead off here. What do you got, Rachel?
All right, so I've got a website called either Go Formative or Formative. I'm not sure what they officially call themselves, but the link is goformative.com. And the idea is that you can use it to create formative and, I would argue, summative assessments for your classroom. It is free with, of course, premium features like any good technology tool has. Mm-hmm. And it's meant for a teacher to kind of put together an assignment that could be shared with a link or with Google Classroom or other things. You end up with a web page that the students would visit where you can embed images and text and video and links, and also you put all your content that you want your students to be working with, and then ask different questions about it. You can do multiple choice and short answer and true false and some drawing type things. And if you get the premium features, you can have them record their responses or do some math things. And then as the teacher, you can assign it, and from your dashboard, you can see how the students have done. So it's a little bit like a Google Form, but with some advanced features that take it kind of the next step. So my students have used it in teaching with tech, and the ones that did found it to be a useful tool.
Very nice.
Good. Yep, yeah. It looks very cool. Sally, what do you got this week?
My turn. I have an article I recently came across from Make use of, one of our favorite websites. So it is titled The 100 Plus Best Websites on the Internet. And the concept is that they've compiled this list, and it's kind of a breathing blog post. It's not static. It's constantly being reevaluated and things added and taken away. But the best of the best kind of list of websites. They aren't including any apps on this particular page, just websites that they found that are really useful, good stuff. And they have it organized into different categories. So books, browsing, files, finance, movies, music, news, social, software, etc. And I think many of us could spend a lot of time just perusing the list and exploring the sites. I am always curious if there are going to be new things like GoFormative, Rachel, I've never heard of. And that gets me excited because there's so many great sites that we've talked about many times on the show that it's sometimes hard to discover new top of the line kind of good stuff. But I did find several on here just in a few minutes of browsing that I thought were really worth the time of exploring. One I'd never heard of is called Just Paste It, and it is a simple service for hosting samples of formatted text at a unique URL. And so you can go there and just type out some text, maybe add images, design your URL that you want to give people as the link. And you don't need an account. You don't need anything. You just need to type into the page and press the magic button, and you get a web page that people can surf to and see your content. So I have an example. I'll include an example in the show notes, but basically I just put an image and type some text and I have a shareable link that's a custom link that I created at Just Paste It website. So I thought that was pretty cool. Another one I saw in there that I have used before and I really appreciate in times of needing to convert files is Zamzar. And I love that they mentioned it because when you go to Zamzar, sometimes you get kind of overwhelmed by advertisements and things like that. And you think maybe this isn't the greatest place for me to be, but they totally have it nailed to do file conversions. So I used to work on the board of directors of Treasure House, and somebody had the precursor to Microsoft Office. It was called Microsoft Works. And they would type up newsletter articles for me in Works and send me these Works files, which just don't open in anything that I have on my current computer. And I could always go to Zamzar and upload that Works file and get the text content that was in the file in a Word document instead. So it can be a really useful utility when you're kind of stuck with a file format that you just can't work with. And they have everything for audio and video, as well as, you know, text editing and things like that. So really impressive file converter. That's just a couple from Make Use Of's 100 plus best sites on the internet. And I think I'll just leave it at that. You may hear some of those sites as my picks in the future, but I was excited to find this list.
Nice. There used to be, and maybe there still is, a service called StumbleUpon, which was really good for that kind of thing, too. You just kind of rotated through different websites. I don't know if it still exists, but I can remember spending a little bit of time going through that and, you know, discovering different things, different mm-hmm. websites and, you know, something like this, different tools and utilities. That's pretty mm-hmm. cool. All right, my pick of the week. So last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, my Apple Watch died, and that was very sad. It wasn't the latest and greatest. It was a version 2. They're on version 4 now, so it had a little age on it. And I bought it used, so there was no saving it. It just would not, you know, one day it would not turn on. I would plug it in or put it on its little charging cradle, and it would get like burning hot. So I pretty much recognized that it was maybe at the end of its life. So I had a decision to make. I could buy a new one. The version 2s weren't around anymore. I had trouble getting that one. You could probably find version 3 around, but I would probably not be happy unless I had a version 4. So I priced that out, and it came to almost $500 when you throw in AppleCare and I prefer the larger version. I forget, is it 44, 46 millimeter, something like that. So I said $500, that's a tough pill to swallow. So I started to kind of examine what my needs were and how I use the Apple Watch. And the two things I really used the most were exercise and heart rate and notifications. So I began looking at different options. And before I had the Apple Watch, I used a Fitbit. And now Fitbits have kind of come into their own, and they do, you know, those two things really well. They will track, obviously, steps and stairs and heart rate and running and now swimming, you know, all kinds of things like that. And then they do notifications even with an iPhone or an Android phone. So I took a look at those, and the one that's most recent is the Fitbit Charge 3, which is my pick of the week. And I've really been pleasantly surprised at the capabilities, you know, of this. A couple of things I really like. One is the price, $150. I think there's not even a higher version, so it's $150 for all those features. It's really lightweight. It seems to be super durable. It does sleep tracking. And one of the best things about this is battery life. I can get about a week, I've found. My Apple Watch would be one day, hopefully. But this has been kind of a revelation to me, and it does everything that I really was counting on the Apple Watch to do. And this is a really nice experience. They have a great app that goes along with it. You know, it gives you the encouragement to stand up and walk around. It sets your step goals. It'll track weight. It'll allow you to record weight and records your sleep. And it also syncs with my FitnessPal, which is where I keep my nutrition and all those things. So it's really a nice quality device. They have different bands you can put on it. You can wear it in the shower, swimming, whatever. Just kind of a nice alternative. So if you're looking for something like this, I guess I would highly recommend it. It's not you don't have a lot of style options. It's, you know, going to be the same size. You do have some band options, of course, but I've been really, really pleased with it for the past week or so. That it's kind of doing everything I need for a reasonable, in my opinion, a reasonable price versus kind of the arm and the leg that you might have to pay for today's Apple Watch. So Fitbit Charge 3 is what I'm recommending here.
I have a Charge 2. Rachel, do you wear an activity tracker?
I have my Apple Watch. It attempts to be an activity tracker. It is probably the most ignored thing in my life.
So that's interesting. I just want to turn back the hands of time just a little bit, because I do remember some time ago being called a digital dinosaur for wearing a watch. And now wearing an Apple Watch and two a Fitbit tracker. So I like it that you need something on your arm to keep up with. That's a good thing.
It is. Yeah. So kudos to Fitbit. They've come a long way. And I think the Charge 2, that doesn't do heart rate, does it? I think that's one of the big differences. Oh, does it? Okay,
yep,
awesome.
Right there on the screen, Mons. I'm not going to tell you what mine is right now, but it does.
I'll tell you what mine is if you tell me what yours is.
I don't have a great heart rate. My resting heart rate right now is 95. Isn't that high?
That is high.
Yeah.
You got to take some deep breaths, Sally.
So what was yours, I told?
60.
Oh, there you go. See, so, mine's always up there.
Maybe there's something wrong with your Fitbit.
So that would be better than me saying heart rate's 95. So
that'll bring your
heart
rate down right there, just thinking it's the technology and not your heart. So
there you go.
All right. Speaking of elevated heart rates, we're to that time in our show where all our ladies get excited, and that's the Pinterest resource.
Woohoo. We are Settle substituting down. Ministry resource for Pinterest resource once a month on our EdTech shows, particularly because teachers really do have a lot of great boards out there that help them in their classrooms. And we look to Rachel for some inspiration on Pinterest this month, and she came up with a great board to share.
Yeah, I've got a Lent-focused Bible lesson Pinterest board that I started curating back when I was teaching first and second grade and added a few new things to since then. Mild caveat, most of the things that you find, at least in my experience, either on Pinterest or a lot of them linked to Teachers Pay Teachers things, seem to be very Catholic-focused. So just, you know, always check for biblical accuracy. But there are a lot of pretty great ideas for how to emphasize the Lenten season in your classroom.
Very cool. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes. We're to the time in our show where we examine community feedback, those people that have given us a shout-out of some sort via email, voicemail, across the social networks of some sort, and we've collected them all together, and we share them at this point. Sally, what do we got?
Well, first up, we just want to give a shout-out to a Wells Techer in our audience. That would be Professor James Karlofsky, Rachel's co-worker there at Martin Luther College. He had an article recently on the Issues in Lutheran Education blog. I believe that's produced by the Graduate Studies area at Martin Luther College. And the title was Teaching with Technology, so I thought that fit really well with this show. James says, three big questions come to mind. Screen time. How much is too much? What do standards say about teaching and learning with technology? And what could be a goal of teaching with technology in a classroom? And he addresses each of those questions in his article. And I think teachers of all
stripes
and sizes, stripes, that's a good way to say it, different ages and everything, everyone needs to be thinking about these kind of things. James got some great references there, brings in some information about SAMR, which is substitution, augmentation, modification, and redefinition, a great model to follow when using technology in the classroom. So not a real long read. I think you guys can all benefit from it. So check out James's article.
Very nice.
Next up, we had an email from our friends at Christ in Media Institute. Specifically, Dr. Tom Custer wrote, looking for stories. He says, do you know of anyone whom the Lord found and who became a Christian in an unusual or dramatic way? Do you know of anyone whom the Holy Spirit is preserving in the faith, who is leading a Christian life in the face of exceptional challenges? Do you know of any Christian lives that are stories waiting to be told? So they're actually looking for stories for a podcast effort that they want to work through the Christ in Media Institute. This came from an article that was part of the Gospel Outreach with Media conference last fall. That's an online conference that's hosted by Christ in Media each year. And they had actually a promo, like a introductory example of this podcast. They've titled it Lost Coins, and it's just to celebrate remarkable Christian lives. And I listened to this first one. You know, somehow I missed this when the conference was going on last fall. But I went and listened to the first one. I really enjoyed
it. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah. The narrator is Dr. Ted Peterson. He's a Bethany Lutheran College graduate, gone on to get his PhD in teaching at Florida Institute of Technology. And it's a mixture of him narrating and then these interview segments with someone from the church in Costa Maya. We've talked about the Costa Maya ministries recently on the podcast. And I really felt like it was like I was listening to This American Life. And
production value was good. Yeah.
It was great. Yeah. So if you're interested, if you have ideas or whatever, you can shoot us an email here at Wells Tech and we'll get you in touch with Dr. Custer, or just use the link to surf over to Christ in Media Institute and you can find their contact information there as well. But they would welcome your ideas of stories for Lost Coins podcast.
All right.
And then finally, one more email that we got from Michael Vliger, who teaches grades 5 and 6 and is the tech coordinator at Risen Savior in Mankato, Minnesota. He shared a link from the Cult of Pedagogy podcast, and it's 6 tech tools to try in 2019. So full disclosure, I think Michael was having a snow day. One of many that have been experienced there in southern Minnesota. And he was catching up on some podcasts, and he came across this podcast from earlier in 2019. And there was a list of 6 tools. I think there were some honorable mention tools as well. This is kind of like my pick of the week with the 100 best websites. Right. These are really exceptional tools that they've outlined. Equity Maps, which is an iPad app where you can put your classroom seating chart in and just touch the student's place in the seating chart to indicate if they're participating, if they're speaking up in class or whatever part of your discussion. So you can have an idea from the app who is and isn't contributing in the classroom and with what frequency and things. There's one called Pro Writing Aid, which is an excellent evaluator of writing skills. Google Tour Creator, we've talked about this on the podcast before, create virtual reality 360 type tours with their Tour Creator tool. So you could do this in your church or school to give a tour of your facilities. There's one called Great Big Story, which is a curated set of videos. And they did say that not everything is age appropriate for use in the classroom, so make sure you preview first. GeoGuessr Game, which is something we've also talked about on the podcast. They drop you somewhere in Google Street View, anywhere in the world, and you have to figure out where you are and narrow it down on the map. I played the other day, and I was in Finland, and I got within 2 kilometers of the point where the game started, so I thought that was pretty good.
How long did it take you?
It didn't take that long. I actually rode down the highway, and there was a street sign with 2 city names on it, so that was pretty easy. But sometimes it can be really challenging. So,
yep, that sounded, the way they described it in the podcast or the article was really interesting. That you know, you could, you know, plumb the depths of all online resources to try and figure out where in the world you are based on signs or, you know, landmarks or whatever, and you can kind of use a lot of different Google tools to try and figure that out. That sounded very cool.
Mm-hmm. Number 6 on their list was WebJets, which is it's a board for pinning things, kind of a Pinterest type or Trello type way of pinning things. Be very useful for groups who are collaborating, and you can add images and Google Docs and attach files and all different kinds of formats or work there. So looks like a cool tool. So thanks for sharing that, Michael. Michael will be joining us at EdTech Lead 19. That's our summer education, leadership, and technology conference that's coming up in Wisconsin Dells, and looking forward to seeing Michael there and hoping that we'll see a lot more Wells Techers in attendance.
WellsEdTechLead.com is a way to find out more or to sign up. The way to contribute to the show through this community feedback segment that we have each and every week is by going to our show notes page, probably the easiest way, wellstech.wells.net, and you can leave a comment there. You can also see all of the social networks that are available to you. We probably should also announce, and we did announce it last week as well, that we are now on Spotify, this podcast, so you can find us there. And this past week, we also added TuneIn Radio. So if you are a TuneIn Radio fan, you can search for Wells Tech and find us there. There's not a link quite yet on the show notes page for that. But so if you want to get in touch with us, it's not hard to do. So please do. We would love to hear what you have to say or ways that you can add your voice to our show. Video of the week.
We have a video to share featuring Pastor Jeremy Maddock. He's talking about the Grow in Grace Institute, and that circles back to our discussion from Wells Now. One of those ways that you can support your called workers is to support their engagement with Grow in Grace at Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary. And I think if you listen to him, I think you'll be very interested in doing so, because it has a lot of benefits that he outlines in a very short video. So check it out.
Very good. Sally, what does episode 591 have in store for us?
Well, we are looking forward to welcoming Wells Techer Pastor Peter Hagen to our show. He's been contributing lots of great content and ideas for us lately, and one of those is something he titled Digital Side Doors to Church. I thought it was a really interesting concept, and we want to talk with Pastor Hagen and learn more about what he thinks that can entail.
Very nice. So tune in next week for that. Rachel, thanks so much for joining us. Really always a pleasure to have you on the show, and your contributions are so awesome. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It is a pleasure to be here as always.
Blessings on your work there at Martin Luther College in beautiful New Ulm, Minnesota.
Beautiful and snowy.
Right. Beautiful. And thank you, Sally, for your contributions, and you bring it each and every week. So thanks for your dedication and talents.
And maybe I don't say it often enough, but thank you, Martin, for your contributions as well. Wouldn't be Wells Tech without you.
Now that everybody's been thanked, we can say goodbye and thank all of our listeners for tuning into 590. Come back for 591. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.